This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When it's time for a new credit card, the best ones do way more than just buy stuff. And that's why U.S. Bank offers credit cards that make every day more rewarding. Earn cash back, score points when you shop, dine out, travel, or binge watch, or get a low intro APR. U.S. Bank credit cards were designed to fit your lifestyle. So make every day more rewarding and check out usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
We are back and we are live. It is Fight IQ presented by RotoWire. Here to talk UFC 256. Our main event is for the UFC Flyweight Championship of the World. Davison Figueiredo taking on Brandon the Assassin Baby Moreno. Welcome back, everyone. I am your host, the Daily Fantasy Sniper. With me, as always, the co-host, the analyst, the really important guys. It is Chris Olsen. You can find him on Twitter at RealChrisOlsen, and Joe, better known as Sun Tzu. Guys, how you doing?
Doing good. Doing great. Excited for this card. I think there's a lot of good fights on here, especially like Tony Ferguson, Charles Oliveira could headline a fight night card. So I think there's some really good sneaky fights on here. And, I'm going to learn a hard lesson with Figueiredo twice, I guess, to give a preview. But
wow,
it's just one I'm going to have to learn. You know, sometimes you put your hand on the stove, you burn your hand, and you're like, oh, it wasn't that hot. Maybe we can try again.
Did you know that Figueiredo and Moreno, I think, have the same mat? No, I'm sorry. Moreno and Perez have the same manager.
Is that right?
I thought I had heard that. Let's just not lose any more fights, guys. I'm getting so fed up with DFS, you know, with these late losses of fights that, you know, I'm like transitioning more of my play over to just wagering, which frankly I've been a lot more successful at anyway, you know, over the course of the last few cards anyway. But I really do have a strong feeling about this card. It's almost scary how much I like my lineups that I created so far. So I guess we'll see. I'm sure there's going to be some debate with Chris already giving a hint as to which direction he's moving in with the main event.
Well, what are the dogs he's picking, though? I mean, there's a lot of live dogs in this card. I don't hate that one.
Oh, I agree. And I will say, in full disclosure, I'm changing one of my picks that I made early in the week.
All right, we're going to talk about that.
I have to do it.
You went to the dark side. There's a lot of live dogs on this card. Really, it's a sneaky good card.
Oh, I love it.
GPPs. It is. There is probably maybe one or two fights where I go meh, and all the other fights, and one of those is because of a late replacement.
Yep.
It's top to bottom. Like, quite frankly, let's go through a quick Ferguson Oliveira. Chris said it. Which one of these fights, I'm going to list off fights that are all on this card. Tell me if any of these could not be a headliner to a pandemic fight night card. Ferguson Oliveira, Holland Souza. That could be a main event of a fight night card, especially these days. Yeah. Dos Santos Gagne. Would not totally surprise me. That's probably, and I can go borderline if I go pure pandemic. Moicano Fiziev's a fun fight. That could be a fight night.
Especially game. Given the public's got the line move wrong. So especially that for that reason.
I'll be interested to hear your take on that. Guys, before we get started on the breakdowns, make sure you go to rotowire.com/free for a 10-day free trial to all their premium content. No credit card required. We record these on Friday nights. You can listen to the replays. Actually, first, to watch them live if you're not already. YouTube, the RotoWire YouTube channel. You can also subscribe to the podcast, RotoWire MMA. All right, guys, let's get into it. Let's break down some fights. Oh, before I get that far, welcome to those guys who are in chat. Thank you for being here. Just scrolling through real quick. I see TJ here, Ryan Honia, who I think is new. So welcome, Greg Stone. I see some new guys in here. So welcome to everybody who is new. Comments in chat, and we will get to them as we move along here. Let's talk fights. Chase the Dream Hooper, 9,300, taking on Peter Barrett at 6,900. Line on this fight. Chase Hooper is minus 305. Peter Barrett, plus 275. Fight does not go to decision, minus 240. Chase Hooper, young guy. Joe, is he improved? Is he better? Or can he just get Peter Barrett down?
You know, I don't know. Honestly, this is not a fight that I'm super interested in.
At minus 240?
No.
Distance? That's scary, man.
I don't really like this fight all that much. I do think that, you know, the path to victory for Barrett is to keep it standing, which call me Captain Obvious for saying that. But I believe that if he could keep it standing, he can have some success at 6.9K. You should probably have some lineups with Peter Barrett in them simply because it allows you to build a hell of a lineup around him. I'm honestly not going to have a whole lot of Hooper. I mean, he was exposed by Bruce Leroy. I'm not saying that Barrett is as good even as Bruce Leroy, and the UFC is likely trying to kind of lob him a softball. But, you know, honestly, he's just lost standing up. And unless he's made some major improvements between his last fight and now, I think Barrett could beat him standing. It's just a function of, you know, Peter Barrett's been submitted. He can get taken down. It's all going to be about game plan. So, you know, I suppose I have to pick Hooper, but I really do think Barrett's live, and I'm going to have more of Barrett on DraftKings than I'm going to have Hooper.
All right, Captain Obvious. I don't know if I totally agree with that because Barrett hasn't shown he can stop a takedown. I'm on Hooper, but I am scared because Hooper, young in his career, has taken a ton of damage. Barrett could win on the feet. I am targeting both sides of this fight, more so on the Hooper side because, God, he can't stop a takedown. Chris, how do you see it?
Yeah, I'm on Hooper too, of course. One of the things that really worries me here is I just don't know if he's physically strong enough to compete with a lot of these guys. I mean, he looks sort of like a stiff breeze would blow him over just to look at him. And then, you know, Bruce Leroy, Alex Caceres, who has made some grappling strides, I don't want to say that he's totally not improving, he is, but when you look at a guy who gets subbed as his primary mode of losing fights, and then Chase can't do that, it does make it hard to be really confident that Hooper's going to just get in here and do this. The good thing about Hooper is we saw in the Caceres fight is he's tough and he's relentless. You hit him with shots, he'll keep coming, and he's going to keep trying to do what he wants to do. So I like that aspect of it. I also, like what Joe said, and I think, Sean, you echoed it as well, that Barrett gets taken down a lot, gets subbed when he loses. So Lyle had his back, and they were close to it. He was close to a choke in that fight. It's just the strength advantage. I don't know who Hooper has it. I'm nervous. And it's one of these fights, too, where I think if Hooper doesn't do this early, it's not going to get any better for him later on. So, yeah, it's a tough one. I certainly like Hooper. But if it extends, you know, I think you got to like Barrett more and more. So I would target both. I think Barrett is going to be not very highly owned. I was actually surprised when I saw a lot of the scuttlebutt was like, this is definitely a Hooper fight. I mean, he should win, but I don't know how to have supreme confidence in him. So
I disagree, Chris, a little bit. I think Barrett will be, you know, reasonably owned because there's only 10 fights.
That's true.
You know, with 10 fights. And again, Hooper is really, really expensive. And I don't know if anybody with a straight face can tell me that, like, Hooper is even in their top three DraftKings favorite plays. Like, you know, I did some rankings for you know, our good friend Brett Apley and in the different price ranges. And I don't think I saw Hooper come up too many times in the top three. So
around him.
Yeah, I mean, I just think there's a lot of value around him. So, look, I mean, maybe for that reason, Hooper is worth some action because he's maybe not going to be as highly owned as some of the other guys that are, you know, either fighting in a main event or, you know, have proven to be good DraftKings scorers. But, you know, I don't like him in this spot. I mean, prove me wrong. You know, he's fighting a journeyman. who's not that great. I think he's part of Joe Lozan's camp up in Boston, was on the Contender Series. I think won the fight by decision on the Contender Series. So, you know, his strength is longevity. So let's see what happens.
All right, moving out. Tisha, the Tiny Tornado Torres at 8,900, taking on late replacement debutante Sam Hughes at 7,300. Line on this fight, Tisha Torres -570. Sam Hughes, the comeback is +480. Fight goes to decision. Hey, it's Tisha Torres, -270 to see the cards. Look, Tiny Tornado is better everywhere, but how well does she score for DraftKings? To me, my quick breakdown is she's going to win. Probably safe for cash games, and it's the balancing act of how much is she going to score? Can she win you a GPP? And despite this line, I think she's going to be pretty unowned because everyone knows the book on Tisha Torres. So I have Torres. I'm not going to fade her like some people might. I am going to fade Sam Hughes. Good for you stepping up here, but people always forget how good Tisha Torres is. I was all over her against Brianna Van Buren, cleaned up there betting-wise. I don't think she's going to fall off here. So give me Tiny Tornado, and it's a DFS decision to make. Chris, who you got?
Yeah, one of the things that's interesting to me about this fight from a DraftKings perspective is, as I get my solo layout in, is Tisha Torres doesn't wrestle a lot in general, but when she feels like she needs to wrestle, she does. She wrestled a lot in the Njaček fight. There were a couple other recent fights where she wrestled a lot that I tried to pull up, but I didn't beat the prediction here. But suffice to say that she does try to wrestle a lot when she has to. She's not very good at it. I think her takedown accuracy is like 14% or something. But Sam Yu stands up very tall. I don't see her stopping a shot. It seems like what she likes to do is look for opportunistic chokes in those exchanges. She got one in one of her recent fights. I think that's something she likes to do. And in general, I don't think she's a bad looking prospect. I actually think she might have a future in this division. She is a good pressure boxer. She throws in combination. I like that about her. I just think that Tisha's pace and the wrestling is just going to be something that Hughes is not going to be able to stand up to here. So I like Torres. I think there could be some more takedowns than we're used to seeing, and I think that makes her a little more alive in DFS. But yeah, it's going to be a decision. But I don't really see Hughes as particularly alive here, just because I don't really see how she can win. I don't think she's going to knock out Tisha Torres, and if she doesn't, I can't see her winning two rounds. So yeah, the pick is Torres, and potentially maybe a bit more high scoring than some of her more recent fights.
Joe, who you got?
Yeah, I'm a little bummed because I actually I was all queued up to do a nice dog parlay with Torres when she was fighting Angela Hill. I actually liked her against Angela Hill, and I was going to combine her with other female fight on this card. You know, so I was a little bummed. You know, there's not a lot of value in Tisha Torres at -550, I believe. The other thing is friends don't let friends bet female fighters coming out of the state of Washington. Miranda Danger Granger. This is another Washington fighter here. If you want to look at like her loss is against Vanessa Demopoulos, who actually was beaten by Corey McKenna. I don't know. I mean, obviously you got to like Torres here. The question is, Torres has not been a prolific DraftKings scorer. What is her average? Less than 60, 56 points, I believe. So what are you going to do here at 8.9K with Tisha Torres? Are you going to bank on her getting, one of, two finishes in her entire career against a short notice fighter? That's what you're really betting on if you play Torres at 8.9K, because in all likelihood, and again, you never know with fight metrics, but like she's likely not going to score a lot of points in a decision. So what do you do at 8.9K? So while I like Torres to win, I don't see a lot of betting value at -500, and I don't see a lot of DraftKings value at 8.9K.
Moving on, moving out. Next fight up, Billy Q, Billy Quarantillo, 8,500, taking on Gavin. I once got beat up so bad by Rick Glenn, nobody saw me for 2 years. Tucker at 7,700. Line on this fight, Billy Q, minus 152. Gavin Tucker, plus 142. Fight goes to decision, minus 170. Look, I make jokes about Gavin Tucker. Clearly a talented guy. Billy Q is a slow starter. Got a kick that, but Billy Q is 4-0 in the UFC. For me, Billy Q, too much volume, too much pressure. And unless Tucker jumps on him early and Quarantillo starts slow again, I think it's just Billy Q all day. And I like this line a little bit here. Joe, what you got?
Yeah, so look, I got on Q before the line started to get really crazy. So I'm picking Q here. But what's really interesting about this fight is, you know, you've got three losses between these two guys and what, 28 victories, something along those lines, 27 victories. So you've got guys that don't lose a lot. What's really odd is Gavin Tucker's career. There's like big gaps, you know, in his career where he was very inactive. You know, I think if you, and I'm looking really quickly on Tapology, like he didn't fight between 2017 and 2019, essentially took 2 years off.
Well, that was, you know why that one was, at least for a year of it. That was the Rick Glenn fight.
Well,
that
right.
Fucking brutal.
And that's where I'm going, brutal. Right? That's about as brutal a decision loss as you ever want to see. And, you know, he came back and he choked out Wu Choi. That wasn't, you know, look, that wasn't a great test for him. He was a slight favorite in that fight. Here's my fear is that the way Q fights is very pressure oriented. So I could see him certainly putting the pressure on Tucker and wearing him down just like Rick Glenn did. So I don't know that this is a great matchup for Tucker, although, you know, Tucker's got some kicks. He, you know, could maybe catch our guy with something here, Billy Q. But that Billy Q Carlisle fight was just such a fun fight. And I like this guy genuinely as a person too. He's very articulate. You know, he gives good interviews. That's not any reason to bet him or play him on DraftKings, but he's kind of priced right in that mid range at 8.5. And the line is getting a little away from you, but I still think there's some value in the line on DraftKings Sportsbook. So I'm going to take Q here. I like him as a DraftKings play. I like him as a wager.
Chris, what you got?
Yeah, I like Quarantillo too. And for a lot of the reasons you guys mentioned.
Guys, don't worry. If you're new here, we're going to start fighting soon.
Trust yeah. Me. Don't worry. This won't last.
It's coming.
Yeah. All peace is short-lived, so you don't have to worry about that. But I for a lot of the reasons you guys mentioned, I think the pressure is going to be a big factor here. The reach of Quarantillo is a big factor. And Joe mentioned that Tucker likes to use his kicks, but he's not going to have the range to really do that here. I also just don't like the way he responds when he gets hit. He got hit by that uppercut from Justin James because he just sort of ducked and covered and didn't really see it. So there's a lot of stuff I don't like about him. I do think simultaneously, though, he might be undervalued just because we all flash back to that to that Rick Glenn fight. It wasn't the best look, but he's definitely skilled. He's definitely fast. He throws a combination. He wrestles a lot. And I believe he's also a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, if somebody wants to check me on that. But so there's a lot of marks in his favor. I just think that the physical advantages of Quarantillo are too much. I think that the pressure is going to get to the guy's name who I'm talking about. Who I can't
Gavin remember. Tucker.
Yeah. Tucker. That's right, and I just think it's going to be
all credibility when you're going to pick Moreno later.
Yeah. But no, I just think it's going to be a bit too much. It's going to be a fun scrap. It's going to be a good fight. I'm interested to see these two on the ground. But generally, when you have two guys who are good on the ground, the length really plays for a lot. We've seen that with Aljo Sterling recently. So give me Quarantillo in what should be a high scoring fight.
Moving on, moving out, Rafael Fiziev, 8,400, taking on Renato Moicano at 7,800. Line on this fight, Fiziev, minus 145. Moicano is plus 135. Fight does not go to decision, minus 135. All of Moicano's last three fights have been under 1 minute twice. He's been knocked out. Fiziev hits hard, hasn't got a knockout yet. Moicano, clearly chin issues showing, has shown good striking. Probably time to start leaning on your grappling, son. Who you got on this one, Chris?
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because Fiziev's a guy who had all these kickboxing accolades, and then he goes out and gets absolutely starched in his debut, and so we're not sure what to expect. He has a decent performance in his next fight. Nothing great, but he really shines against Diakhaeze. Those thundering body kicks from range, the ridiculous defense where he does his matrix thing to avoid kicks, like almost bending his back, you know, all the way down, which was something. He can scramble on the ground. He can wrestle. One of the big questions here for me is going to be, we haven't really seen what his takedown defense looks like. I think Diakhaeze might have tried one or two. He's not the best shot wrestler. Moicano has been using his wrestling a lot more lately. We're going to really have to see what that looks like. But I think even if he gets him there, I think he's going to have a hard time keeping him there. I think Fiziev can scramble really well. And, it's going to be a great fight. I do think Moicano is a little bit too hittable for this, especially with a guy who hits as hard and varies his targets like Fiziev, and striking just a little too much, little too rudimentary, although I do like the light kicks. There are certain things about the stand-up game I like. I think it's going to have to really be wrestling, grappling heavy, and I'm not sure that he can keep him there to really get things done. So I have to go with Fiziev.
Here's the problem. I take issue with saying his striking is rudimentary because it's brutal. Because me and Joe were cage side when he was kicking, literally kicking the shit out.
Oh yeah, no, the leg kicks are good.
No joke.
Stole my thunder, man.
That was the body kicks. His kicks in general. I have dreams about those kicks though. Yeah. Like they were brutal. I think the bigger issue is if he stands with it, he gets knocked out.
Yeah.
He needs to get this fight to the ground. I think he does. I'm taking Moicano for the upset. Joe, who do you have?
I love Moicano in this spot. I mean,
I don't know if I go that far, by the way.
Calvin Kattar is a better striker than Fiziev is. And like you said, he
a better boxer. I don't know if he's a better
Striker or a boxer. Let's not get too technical here. So he's got better hands, let's say that, than Fiziev, Calvin Kattar. And Moicano pieced him up. I mean, he obviously pieced up Cub Swanson. Then he loses to Aldo, who's, you know, longtime goat in the weight class, longtime goat, and Korean Zombie, which was not a good look. I'll give you that, right? Moicano has fought better competition. He's more well-rounded as a fighter. I don't understand the line move. I thought it was a gift at plus 120. I think it's like Christmas, Hanukkah, and Swanza all wrapped up into one at plus 130. Anything more than that, and you're going to kind of, you're just getting a gift from the gods. So I really like Moicano here. I think it's a great spot for him. Have not been super impressed with Fiziev. I do give, look, he hasn't knocked anyone out yet in the UFC. I think Moicano, if he's smart, he'll grapple. He'll get him to the ground. I think he can submit him. Look at Moicano by submission.
Plus 320
is not bad, my friends. I think that's live.
370.
I've been pretty hot with props recently. I have not played that one yet, but I do like Moicano in this spot. I will have a few shares of Fiziev. I'm not saying fade the guy. I will have a few shares of him, but I like him in DraftKings. I like Moicano to bet. One of my favorite plays on the slate.
Joe is pretty tough not to be impressed by that performance against Diakhaeze, though. Come on, man.
Okay, it's Mark Diakhaeze. I don't think much of him either.
By the way, fight does not go to decision minus 135. I think that's interesting because I think Moicano's chin is pretty tough.
Look, I don't hate that as a hedge. You know, I don't hate that as a hedge.
All right, moving out. Daniel Pineda. You told me 6 years ago he's a favorite against Cub Swanson. I'm probably betting my house on Cub Swanson. Now we got a different story. He's 8,300. Cub Swanson is 7,900. Line on this fight. Pineda minus 155. Comeback on Cub Swanson plus 145. fight doesn't go to decision, -155. Got to say, both guys, including Cub, looked pretty good on the scales today. I think it's two guys clearly going different directions. Cub Swanson fighting good guys, but does not look good at all in the cage to me. Pineda, on the other hand, looking better than he ever has. Joe, who do you have?
Man, I like Pineda a lot in this spot. I mean, I think Cub is what, coming off of a surgery, I believe knee surgery. Anyway, I mean, he lost a grappling bout to Jake Shields. Okay. Crohn Gracie, you know, is his one win, you know, since Crocs were cool. Yes, he's fought great competition. Brian Ortega, Frankie Edgar, the aforementioned Renato Moicano, Sugar Shane Burgos. And then he beats one of the Gracies, who we all know are known for their stand-up. You know, loses a grappling bout to great Jake Shields. You're right. I think, you know, Pineda would have potentially won $1 million if he didn't have some issues.
By the way, for what it's worth, guys.
Yeah.
It's red hot. Yeah. Red hot.
I love this spot for Pineda. I don't think it's a great spot for Cub. I'm glad he's got some investments, because I have to believe that if he loses 6 of 7 fights, even as much as the UFC likes him, he's going to be getting a pink slip here.
Yeah, especially with Dana White, they've cut people. You know, Romero gone. They're going to cut more people.
Yep.
It was interesting here. If Pineda gets this fight to the ground, we always hear Swanson the black belt. His black belt. Some of the black belt, he's been subbed a lot.
Dude, his judo is better than his jiu-jitsu. That's what people don't really look at. Like, his judo is much better than his jiu-jitsu.
So, I'm taking Pineda as well, and I can't bet on this version of Cub Swanson. It's hard for me to put anything down on him. Chris, who you got?
Yeah, I'm taking Cub. I'm not 100%
there we go. In love with it,
but I just... You know, I think
sell me on it.
I'm gonna try. Yeah, I really gave a good pitch at the beginning, but I'm working into it. But look, I think that you can say ha ha ha, Crohn Gracie not a striker. That's whatever. But just the way he looked on the feet in that fight was really good to me. He was taking.
Most guys look great shadow boxing.
Well, no, but look, he was mobile in there. He was. Yeah, I love that one, but
oh, that was too easy. Sorry.
Look, he was mobile in there. He was taking angles, and you want to talk about his competition? You can make a heavy argument that he won that Shane Burgos fight. So, I mean, when you look at everything he's done, he's still otherworldly tough. I mean, yes, Moicano hit him with a shot that dropped him, and eventually he got finished. That happens. And if you look at the times he's been subbed, it generally happens when he's hurt, like Moicano, when he's tired or beat up, like, what was it, the first Edgar fight, or like the, you know, by surprise, like Ortega did. And by the way, Ortega subbing you, I don't think should get you marked down on anybody's off list there. But I just think that Pineda's a little too hittable in open space. Herbert was really cracking him when he would throw naked kicks. I think that Cub Swanson could do kind of the same thing. And look, I think that Cub can at least survive on the ground. I don't think that – look, I would be really shocked if Pineda could just take him down and blow him out there. I just don't see that happening. So, Pineda can knock him out. Or what I think is going to happen is that we could get a little replay of the Duho Choi fight, where Cub just takes him into the deeper waters here, where you know, you throw everything you have at him, and he keeps coming. I just wanted to note one thing, that when I was researching, not researching, but, you know, looking at Pineda, he's got, it's either 24 or 26 wins. You know, he's never won by decision. They're all finishes.
Yes.
Which is incredible to me. So, I mean, I don't have anything to add with that. I just thought it was really cool, and I wanted to share it.
So what is the do not go to, doesn't go to decision prop?
Fight does not, is that at the beginning? I believe it was minus, let's pull it up, -155.
That's not bad.
That's not bad at all. No.
Cub gets in all these wars.
Yeah.
They go to
decision. Yeah.
All right, moving on, moving out. Next fight up, Cyril Gagne, 9,200, taking on the ghost. Please retire, Junior Dos Santos at 7,000. Line on this fight, Gagne minus 380, JDS plus 340. Fight does not go to decision, minus 180. Look, Gagne, new school, can grapple, hits hard. JDS, probably better technically striking, can't stay conscious to save his life. Like that's the breakdown in this fight, unfortunately. Did I give the salaries on this one? If I didn't, it was 9.2K for Gagne, 7,000 for Dos Santos. Chris, who you got?
Yeah, this just makes me sad. I'm a big fan of JDS. I love slick boxers in the cage. JDS has always had a good jab and still has one. There's two main problems now. One is that he backs up to the fence. The other is that he's not quick enough
from his consciousness.
Huh?
He's quickly and easily separated from his consciousness. Yeah,
that's another big problem. But the other thing is he's losing his speed, and that really is a problem when he throws the big looping shots that he likes to throw. We saw him get finished by Ngannou from a shot like that. He kept throwing those big uppercuts to try to intercept Curtis Blaydes, and Blaydes caught him and knocked him out. And even in the Rosenstruik fight, like, he's doing good for a round. He gets hit once, gets backed up, and then counter hook, and then that's the end of it. He's just too open when he throws shots and too slow now. And Gagne's biggest attribute here is his athleticism. He is a heavyweight that moves like an athletic light heavyweight. He is just so quick and fluid in the cage. He is a not well put together kickboxer. I think he's going to pressure. I mean, this is a heavyweight fight. So JDS probably is a little undervalued at 7K it was, Sean?
Yes.
So, I mean, you got to have shares. It's a heavyweight fight. It's JDS. He still hits plenty hard. Gagne's had, like, what, 6 MMA fights? So you can't fade him completely. It's not possible. But I do think that Gagne wins here. I think that this will be, I think, 5 stoppage losses in a row for JDS, which is unfortunate. But I think that's going to happen here. But I would say don't forget about JDS here. There's a lot that can happen here, especially against an inexperienced fighter. JDS is the very opposite of that. So, Gagne, but, you know, keep your eyes open for JDS.
Yeah, and if Santos can stay conscious, he's live in this fight, and Gagne's ceiling kind of comes down. I just think that's too big an if here. Joe, who you got?
Yeah, no surprise here. Gagne, the one bit of caution I will give is I wouldn't be at all surprised if this fight went to a decision. Junior does a little rope-a-dope. I do like Gagne here. I'm not sure how great a DK play he is. Because if it does go to decision, I mean, if it goes to decision or he gets an early, 30-second knockout, he's probably not going to score all that well in either case. Relatively safe play, certainly a good cash play, Gagne. I'm really looking forward to Gagne Rosenstruik. I think that would be a great fight.
Yeah.
I do hope that Junior Dos Santos, if he does lose, he leaves his gloves in the octagon. It's a shame that he can't be doing this in front of fans. That's the one reason to maybe bring him back, because, you know, he has done a lot for the UFC. He's made some money, but he's taken really tough fights. I mean, you know, Ngannou, Blaydes, and Rosenstruik. I mean, that's a murderer's row right there. So the only reason I wouldn't want to see him retire is because he can't do it in front of fans. You know, I'd like to get this COVID thing over with, have a card in Brazil, and then have him drop his gloves in the ring in Brazil. Maybe he comes back, he does like an old timers fight. Give me Gagne.
Moving on, moving out. Kevin Holland, 8,200, taking on Jacare Souza at 8,000. Line on this fight, it is flipped. Ronaldo Souza, now the favorite, minus 110. Kevin Holland, plus 100. fight does not go to decision, minus 150. Jacare Souza on the wrong side of 41 these days. Kevin Holland, you know, we've seen how athletic he is, explosive. It was supposed to be him and Jack Hermanson last week. It's supposed to be Vettori and Souza. Flip him around here. I'm not in love with this fight for DK. I'm just not. I think Kevin Holland's going to play with him. Jacare Souza can't get takedowns anymore, which if he can't do that, he's just loading up on his right hand. I have Holland in this fight. I know Joe, this is the one he's flip-flopping on me. So one over two of the dark side. I'm picking Holland, but I don't love this fight for DK. I think there's some value in the fight goes to decision prop at plus 120 here. Joe?
Yeah, I apologize for those who, if anybody made a play based on my early in the week selections, hopefully not. I got sucked in a little bit by the recency bias. I did then realize that Jacare, you know, went to an ugly split decision against the current light heavyweight champion. This fight is back down at 185. I will be honest, I've been running around all day. I have not seen how either one of these guys looks at weigh-ins. Holland usually looks pretty good at weigh-ins. I don't know how Jacare looked, but I think Jacare by sub is probably a gift. I heard the line. I think it was over 2-1. Is that right, Sean?
I think it's 260, 250. Oh, my God.
Yeah, Jacare by sub, 185 against the guy that's very flawed on the ground.
Souza, like, inside the distance, period, is plus 180.
Yeah.
Souza by submission, plus 250.
Yeah, So I don't know how you don't take a stab at that. I mean, you know, like whatever your limits are, you know, $10, $20, $100, whatever. Like Jacare by sub against a guy like Kevin Holland, if he gets it to the ground and Holland can't get up right away, I really think it could end quickly. This is why I'm changing my pick to Jacare here. Like I said, I got sucked in. You know, Kevin Holland is like Mr. Pandemic, you know, LV Annex, you know, fights. And he has looked really good. Don't get me wrong. And that's what kind of got him this spot. But I really don't think this is a great spot for him. Is there some risk? Sure, Jacare is 41. But, like, if Jacare can't handle Kevin Holland, he should be cut, honestly, at 180, especially at 185, you know. So give me Jacare. I've seen some of his training films. He's looks pretty good. Didn't see him on the scales today. Hopefully it wasn't that bad a cut. If anybody has any color on how Jacare looked, feel free to put it in chat. But I will take Jacare here.
Chris, who you got?
Yeah, I'm taking Holland, and I think it's funny that you took it to props. I think you might even play this two ways, because I think Holland by KO is something like 450, 440. So you could do either one of that. I actually do think this fight's going to finish, because I think that, you know, it's funny. You guys talked
about Holland by TKO is, or KO, 260.
Oh, 260? That's
it? Not that good.
I thought it was a little better than that. Maybe it came down. But I what was I saying?
It was 5:30 like 3 days ago.
Yeah. I thought I saw it that big, but wow. So really bet down. But as you guys were saying, I think Sean mentioned it. Jacare hasn't gotten a takedown since the Gastelum fight. He hasn't got a sub since Tim Boach in 2017. And Kevin Holland's a black belt. Travis Luter black belt, who, as we all know,
I'm gonna pause you right there. His fight's the gun, he's in a lot of trouble.
To be clear, I don't think that means he's gonna like sub Jacare or something. I just think it means he can survive on the ground if it gets there. Look,
I disagree. I'm picking Holland, I just don't agree with you.
But Jacare had Kevin Gastelum in mount in the middle of the cage in the first round. He didn't sub him there. So I think saying that another black belt could survive against him, I don't think is that crazy. But anyway, we'll see. One thing I saw that was kind of eye-opening for me in the Jack Hermanson fight was there was an exchange in the first round. Jacare's pressuring against the fence. He brings himself open to go for a punch, and Hermanson hits him with like a three piece counter that brings him to the canvas. He tries to guillotine him. Jacare gets out, and they fight. Kevin Holland's going to have, I think, a 9-inch reach advantage here. That is enormous. That is going to be trouble when Jacare tries to work himself inside. And I don't see why Holland couldn't do what Hermanson did there, except even worse because he's longer and he's quicker. And I think that means he probably has more power as well. So I do think this is a two-way fight. I really think it's either a sub or a stoppage from Holland. I think it finishes. I think it's a good fight to target. But I think that the thing that me and Sean agree on is, it's hard to trust Jacare to get fights to the floor now in the first place. And it's hard to trust him to get subs. So I'm going Holland here. You got to play both sides. I do think it finishes. I do think it scores well. But the pick again is Holland.
Moving on, moving out. Mackenzie Dern, 8,700. Taking on Virna Jandaroba at 7,500. Line on this fight, Mackenzie Dern, -175. Virna Jandaroba, +165. Fight. Deciding which one to read. It's a pick 'em. Fight goes to decision, doesn't go to decision. Pick 'em -110, -115 a piece, depending on your book. This fight is giving me problems because I straight up, I always say this before Mackenzie Dern fight, I am a Mackenzie Dern fan. Virna Jandaroba, it's interesting. We have two BJJ practitioners here. And you go to the feet, neither one are that good on the feet, in my opinion. Dern, I think, is probably a little better BJJ practitioner, but she's more likely to gas. However, she also hits a hell of a lot harder than Jandaroba. So how do I have this fight? I have a slight lean towards Mackenzie Dern. I do think Virna is live. However, I'm kind of getting the sense she's going to be a little popular. So that makes me more the Dern side. But the most likely outcome here is probably a gross striking decision that neither one of them scored great in, and both are live. So I'm picking Dern. Virna's live. I'm worried about how popular she's going to be. Who's up for this one? It's a women's fight. Let's start with Joe.
Yeah. So I kind of teased earlier that I was, when I saw the entire slate with the original composition of fights, I was really hoping to do another one of my three-leg. No offense, chick parlays. And in that parlay was going to be Jillian Robinson as a slight underdog. Jillian Robertson, yeah, to KGB Lee. Jillian Robertson, our friend Tisha Torres against Angela Hill, and VJ against Mackenzie Dern. So lo and behold, the Anderson fight, got dumped. She's fighting now, I guess, Santos. I don't know what happened with KGB Lee. I think she got hurt, broke her nose. That was it, or something like that. Torres is now fighting a replacement, so there's no value there. So what are we left with? We're left with VJ. I like VJ a fair amount in this fight. I agree. I have to agree with Sean. I think she's going to be very popular as a dog. I don't know how great a DraftKings fight this is going to be. I actually like this fight more from a wagering perspective. I've seen some love for VJ by decision, unfortunately, on DraftKings Sportsbook, which is the book that I primarily wager on. I love the props and parlays. There's not that big a spread between decision and winning the fight. So I haven't yet caught that extra juice, but I do think it's a likely outcome, either Dern or VJ by decision. I think, VJ is a better all-around mixed martial artist here. Dern, yes, maybe she hits with power, but she is wild and as non-technical as you can get. She's prone to gassing. VJ has got a wrestling advantage. I say the grappling pretty much neutralizes each other out. As high as a black belt as Dern is, VJ is not that far beneath her. I'd be very surprised if either one of these ladies got subbed. I would honestly be fairly surprised if Dern caught VJ with something and knocked her out. Dern has been blessed by fighting, having her opponents have just awful fight IQ. Look at Randa Marcos. I'll never forget her. I'm never going to go to the ground. Yeah. Thank you, Narco Cop. I know FanDuel. I don't know why FanDuel has this number so much better than DraftKings. +270 is, I think, a pretty good play. Just back yourself up in case something weird happens and, you know, put a straight bet on VJ. But I like VJ here. Again, I think she's going to be popular on DraftKings because of her salary. But I do believe that this is a better fight to bet than to play on DraftKings. So give me VJ.
Chris?
Yeah, that's probably true. Yeah, this is a tough one for me because it's funny. I always look to fade Mackenzie Dern when she's facing strikers because she doesn't have wrestling and she always wins. And now she's facing somebody who can't strike either. And I'm still picking against her, mainly because
my girl's going to cost you both money. I want to bet on her now, just to prove a point.
Okay. I know, I'm sure it will, just because I'm cursed to never, Dern is one of those fighters where I'm always going to pick against her, and she's always going to win. That's the lot that I have with her, and I've accepted it, and I'm at peace.
A lot in life,
but that's it. But yeah, I agree with Joe about the wrestling advantage. I also think that, like, look, we've seen good BJJ players play on top against Dern, and she hasn't looked all that great. Hibas, she wasn't really able to do a lot against her. Ashley Yoder, she wasn't really able to do a lot against her. So I think that in bottom position,
knock down Ashley Yoder and then submit her. I'm thinking of Amanda Bobby Cooper.
Yeah, that was. And by the way, never disrespect my girl like that again.
Amanda Bobby Cooper.
Yeah, ride or die. You know what it is.
Does she have an OnlyFans yet?
I don't know, but
it's coming.
Yeah, but so yeah, I think that like the striking is like it's going to be Tasmanian Devil and whoever connects first. I mean, neither one of these ladies are good strikers. But yeah, I think that the top position in the wrestling is going to be Verna, and I think Verna's too skilled to give up a leg or get caught up in X guard or something like that. Like this isn't the fighters that Dern has been fighting and subbing have been pretty low level with the exception of Randa Marcos, who just decided to dive into her guard in one of the most inexplicable things I've ever seen. But aside from that, I do think, you know, it's a good point about maybe this fight doesn't score well, but the other side of that is Gerald Meerschaert and Eric Spicely. You know, you get two high level black belts in there, maybe they flip around in the cage and do a lot of crazy fun shit that it results in a lot of points. But I do think that I can see the decision angle. I can see them canceling each other out. But my pick is Verna.
All right, moving on, moving out. Co-main event time. Tony El Cucuy Ferguson, 8,600, taking on Charles Dubronx Oliveira at 7,600. Line on this fight. Tony Ferguson, -165. Comeback on Dubronx is +145. Fight does not go to decision, -215. Dubronx, UFC record, or UFC lightweight record, I think, for four finishes. Tony Ferguson takes enormous amount of punishment, keeps pressing forward. We've seen Oliveira fade before. It's a great fight on paper. I'm looking forward to this one. Also, the way Tony Ferguson fights, like, I know we've been indestructible, but at some point, like, the wheels are going to come off and a stiff breeze is going to knock him out. I don't think it's this fight, but it's coming. You can't fight like this forever. You just can't. That being said, he's half as tough against Dubronx as he is against Gaethje. Oliveira's not taking that kind of punishment. He's just not. He's going to sit down. Like, that's just how it is. That being said, I'm picking Ferguson, but I'm going to have a ton of this fight, both sides. Oliveira could break the slate at his price. We get a sub. Tony Ferguson, by the way, don't just think if this fight hits the ground, Oliveira is going to quickly sub him. Tony Ferguson is a 10th planet black belt. Like, he's no joke. First guy to win a UFC title off of his back when he triangled Kevin Lee. Like, he can grapple too. Tony Ferguson is insane, but the real deal. I'm picking Ferguson. Oliveira live. Great DFS fight. You could stack this fight. I firmly believe you could stack this fight in cash games if you wanted to. I probably won't, but it's probably the most stackable fight on this card. Chris, who you got?
Yeah. I think I'm picking Oliveira, but I think that Tony Ferguson, I wonder if, I mean, obviously he's going to be highly owned, but wonder if just a little shine is going to be off him, because I see a lot of people going Oliveira here. I could see why. I mean, you talk about, Sean, that the wheels are going to fall off. We can't forget the brutal beating he took against Gaethje, and it wasn't even just like he knocked him out. I mean, he extended him for five rounds, and then literally, like, Ferguson couldn't take it anymore. It was one of the weirdest finishing exchanges I've ever seen, where he just started shaking his head, and I mean, he had really just taken all the punishment he could take. So it's gonna be interesting to see how he comes back from that. But I think that Ferguson's gonna do what he does. He's gonna pour on the pressure, and I Oliveira is a good pressure striker. I don't know if he's the range striker of somebody like Justin Gaethje. What I do think Oliveira has going for him here is, look, when Tony Ferguson starts pouring on that pressure and starts to get in the phone booth, Oliveira is one of the few guys who can take him down and not have to worry about what happens off his back. A million years ago, he got, heel hooked by Jim Miller, or knee barred by Jim Miller in a position where he didn't try to defend.
He also ate, also just said off his back, you know, Paul Felder rained down elbows and finished him.
That's true. But that was sort of, there's two periods of Charles Oliveira's career. There's the period where what I think ended in that fight, which Sean mentioned, which is the going get tough and now I fade Charles Oliveira. I think we're past that phase in his career, because we've seen him in more recent fights come back. The David Tamer fight, where he had to face adversity, and then he came back and won. Obviously, this is a different animal from that, but it is something worth noting. I am really excited to see these two guys work on the ground. I hope that happens at some point. I'm sure that it will. I'm really interested in seeing that. But I can't get out of my mind the fact that, look, that, I mean, he did sub him, so fair play, and that's what we remember. But the first round, Kevin Lee had Tony Ferguson mounted. And if that bell didn't ring, you know, he was still in a bad spot. You know, if Kevin Lee has 30 more seconds, who knows what happened. Now you're facing a really high-level jiu-jitsu player. Both these guys are going to pressure. They're both going to throw strikes. I love the fight. I echo everything everybody says about how high-scoring it's going to be. I'm slightly picking Oliveira, have both sides, and just enjoy it, I guess, because it's going to be awesome.
Joe, who you got?
Yeah, so I saw Charles Oliveira at my first UFC fight, my first UFC card in Orlando. It was kind of a landmark for me, because I had actually won a contest that from DraftKings that I got. They kind of paid for me to go to Orlando. I got to have dinner with Frank Mir and his wife, and got to sit next to Frank in the fighter section, which was really cool. In hindsight, that was such a great card. I mean, you know, the curtain jerker was Francis Ngannou on that card. Vicente Luque was the next fight, and then Kamaru Usman versus Leon Edwards was the fight after that, right? And those were the first three fights of that card. Valentina Shevchenko made her UFC debut on that card, as did Karolina Kovalkiewicz. And then you had Charles Oliveira. Misses weight significantly, comes in and as an underdog to Miles Jury, and then submits him. And he was coming off of a loss due to a shoulder injury, or he just quit against Max Holloway. And that was his first fight subsequent to that. You know, and then he loses, you know, a few fights, and then, you know, including one to Paul Felder, and then goes on this massive winning streak. You know, and that is where we are right now. Oh, by the way, Nate Diaz was also on that card against Michael Johnson. Whoa, Alistair Overeem knocked out Junior Dos Santos. What a great card. I mean, I think that I'm not, you know, he's fought some good fighters. I do think, though, that the pressure that El Kikui can put on him is going to be too much. And his jiu-jitsu has always been his fallback. Yes, everybody can make the argument that his hands have improved, but can anyone tell me with a straight face that even at 36 years old, that his hands are better than than Tony Ferguson's hands? I think not. I mean, roll up your sleeves. Let's look for needle marks. Yeah, his hands are not better than Tony Ferguson's hands. He's got his jiu-jitsu to fall back on, right? I don't think that's going to work here. Tony Ferguson's jiu-jitsu is just as good, if not better. So I like Tony Ferguson here. Again, 7 months since that hellacious beating by Justin Gaethje, where because of the lack of fans in the audience, you could actually hear the shots. Like, I don't think I've ever seen anyone take as many shots as Gaethje landed on Ferguson. I just don't see Oliveira fighting that kind of fight and catching Tony the same way. So I like Ferguson here. I like him a fair amount. I'm not saying it's impossible for Oliveira to win. I'll have a few shares of him. But I really do think that this is Tony Ferguson's fight.
Main event time, guys. We are here. Davison Figueiredo, 9,000, taking on Brandon Moreno at 7,200. Line on this fight. Figueiredo minus 305. Moreno is plus 275 on the comeback. Fight doesn't go to decision. Minus 225. Before I get on, Chris, I have to say, I understand what he's saying is if you picked Alex Perez, there's the same reason to pick Brandon Moreno here.
Absolutely.
If the fight gets extended, Figueiredo is going to fade. But he's been, I think I learned my lesson. I did pick Figueiredo last time, or Perez. I was kind of leaning away from Figueiredo. Just the wrestling, I thought he could extend him. Dude, there's something different about the way Davison Figueiredo hits guys at flyweight. There just is. And he's got, you know, great submissions. We've seen Moreno be a really good scrambler before. I'm picking Figueiredo. I think he gets a finish again, but and not all the way. Just, you know, I'm not letting Recency Bias completely kill me. Moreno is definitely live in this fight. The path is it being extended, and then Figueiredo slows down. We've seen the pace of Moreno. Maybe he gets it done that way. What I think is interesting is that even in a Moreno win at his price, I don't think he's a lock for the optimal, because I think the most likely path to victory for him is a decision. And that scores, even in five rounds, they say he scores, you know, he could score 85, 90 points. There, that's a really good score and could be on the optimal. There's a lot of 100-point upside on this card. There's a lot of finishing fights. Like, you got Peter Barrett, who could finish Chase Hooper. You got Moicano, who could finish Fiziev. You got, you know, you got heavyweights in JDS. You have Charles Oliveira. Like, are you telling me for sure that Moreno in decision is going to get enough points here? I'm not sold. And overall, I think Figueiredo is going to get a finish anyway. So for me, give me Figueiredo 2 when I love both these guys fought 3 weeks ago. This is a lot of fun. We'll see what happens. Who's up for this fight? I believe it is Joe. Start us off in the main event.
Yeah, so I'll take Figueiredo here. Look, I like what McLovin has accomplished. I'm the assassin baby. Moreno. It concerns me a little bit, the 21-day turn, but my understanding is that he stayed at the PI and did not go home. So he looked really good on the scales, made weight with ease, apparently, which has always been a struggle of his.
124 and a half.
Yeah, all of that to me, like, says Figueiredo is the guy to be beat here and be the fighter of the year. So he's going to win this fight. He's going to be the fighter of 2020.
Chris, who you got?
Yeah, well, you said it, Sean. I just think that if I picked Alex Perez, nothing happened in that fight that should make me change my mind. In the few exchanges we did see on the feet, I thought Alex Perez was getting the better of it. And the thing here is that we have a good jiu-jitsu player who's not just going to lazily position himself in someone's guard to get their neck taken, which is a good thing. I think that Moreno looked really good on the ground against a high-level black belt in Brandon Royval. Took his back, had him in a really bad position in that first round, and another bad one even right before the arm came out of the socket. He was still sort of halfway on his back, sort of in like a three-quarters position. But all that is to say that I think Moreno is probably the better jiu-jitsu player here. We can't ignore the fact that Figueiredo is probably stronger. That matters when you're close in jiu-jitsu. The stronger person is going to have an advantage as long as the skill level is close. So that's something. But a lot of the same things I liked in Perez on the feet, I like in Moreno. I will say that his boxing is not as sharp as Alex Perez's. But what I like about him is that he's not afraid to exchange with people in the pocket. So he's not just going to wilt when Figueiredo applies pressure to him, which is something that I like. He's also never been finished, Brandon Moreno, which is something to keep in mind here. And I think a feather in his cap. I just think that the upshot of Figueiredo being as strong as he is and as powerful as he is, he's also very foot slow and very stationary in the cage. Moreno is not. He's going to be able to bounce around him. He's got an improving jab. He can counter a little bit. I like everything he brings. I know that Figueiredo can knock him out, but the fact that I think Moreno is going to have the jiu-jitsu edge, I think is significant here. I think it could play the difference. It's going to mean that Moreno is going to be able to use his wrestling without much fear of what's going to happen to him on the ground. He has been in bad positions in fights before. We can't forget that. Juicy A. Formiga had him in a couple bad spots. He got out of them. But overall, I still trust him. So as I said, I'm gonna put my hand over the flame one more time and see what I get here. So I'm taking Moreno.
All right, guys, it is time for hot takes. If you're new to the show, give us a hot take in chat. I will read one out, something unexpected. Joe usually pulls out a wager. Doesn't have to be a wager, but something unexpected that you think will happen at UFC 256. Anyone got one locked
in? I got one.
Fire away. Let's go.
So, I stated in the beginning of the broadcast that, my parlays and my wagering has kept me from, calling it quits for 2020 because DFS has not been great. It's been okay. I mean, I haven't gotten completely destroyed, but I just have not been, it's been a real grind. And I work-wise, it's been really tough to do the level of preparation that I need to do for DFS, which is honestly a lot more than making wagers. So I've been putting a lot of time into wagers. Here is a parlay that I like. Past performance is no precursor of future performance here. I'm going to come out and say that. When I put this in, it paid 18.78 to 1.
I'm firing this up right now.
It may be a little, what you're going to lose in one of the fighters, you may get back in another. So yeah, put this in and let me know how it pays. So I'm starting this off with my girl VJ. I put it in at plus 140. She's plus 160 now. So
I don't want to do this, but I'm going to do it just for you.
Yeah. You actually got better. You got better odds now. I followed that up with Moicano, at plus 120, who's plus 130 now. So you're getting better odds there.
My book's a little different, but keep going.
Yeah. Here's where you're probably going to get worse odds is I've got Billy Q in here at minus 124.
Yeah, mine's got a minus 160.
Okay, so yeah, that's where you're going to lose. But it looks like it's pretty close to a push right now. And then I got El Kakui, Tony Ferguson at minus 175.
Got minus 160 here.
Okay, better. Then I got Deviston Figueiredo at minus 323.
Got 312. All right, so.
And what did you come up with odds-wise? What is that going to pay? What is that odds?
The book's being funny. Let's see.
It's probably pretty close to 18, 19 to 1.
Why is it not giving me?
Okay, so.
Yeah, it's about, I think it's like 18 to 1.
Yeah, so while you're looking that up, I bet on this parlay $106.50 to win 2,000.
Wait, say that again. You put how much on it?
$106.50 to win 2,000. So to make a $2,000 profit.
You're a crazy man. Yeah, it's I got plus 183. God, Joe, you really like Vierna that much?
Again, based on my DraftKings plays, this is a pretty small wager. So I think it's at 18 to 1, 19, almost 19 to 1, I like it.
I'm probably going to pop out Vierna and put in something else of my own.
A little bit of Vierna, just in case it hits, you're going to feel awful. You know, just do it for a couple of bucks. You don't have to do it for $5. whatever.
I'm doing it for 10. I don't know. We'll see. You got a hot take locked and loaded for us, Chris and guys?
Yeah, mine is not nearly as exciting. I'm a little upset because now it's way lower than it was when I saw it. But either way, we're still going to go with Kevin Holland knocking out Jack Grayson.
I think that's a hot take.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. I am going to go, let me count them up here. I'm going to go to my good old reliable here because I remember it being a lot. All right. You ready? 9 of our 10 fights are going to end inside the distance.
Wow.
And I think the only one that doesn't,
VJ,
really couldn't, is I think it's Torres Hughes.
Really?
I actually, now this is just personal, but you want me to give a hot take not related to that?
Go ahead.
I think Dern is going to knock out Virgil Dabrova.
Wow. That's a hot take.
I'm actually thinking about placing that bet just because it's one of those two BJJ practitioners and just Dern swings freaking wild.
It could happen. I'm not going to say it can't happen, but.
So, I like nods, by the way. Tisha's first finish since Rear Naked Choking Lima. Yeah, she absolutely could happen. The 9 of 10 could be maybe a different fight. So my official hot take is going to be 9 of 10 fights end inside the distance.
What's the price on that Dern by knockout?
Dern by knockout is, let me pull up exactly what it is right now.
Plus 250?
Plus 650.
Oh, 650.
There you go.
That's not bad. I might have to hedge and take a little play on that as a hedge.
Yeah, I like it. All right. The second one was way hotter. None says Billy Q round 3 plus 1400. That is
that's Narco Cop. That's Mike from Chicago.
Pretty spicy, and I got to tell you, that's how Billy Q fights, man. That's just that is a Billy Q prop round 3 finish. All right, guys, that's what we got. Make sure you go to rotowire.com/free for a 10-day free trial to all their premium content. No credit card required. For Joe, who is, you can find him at Sun Tzu, Chris at Real Chris Olsen. I am the Daily Fantasy Sniper. Find me on Twitter at @sniper_DFS. Guys, good luck in your contest. We have this week, we have next week, and then we're off for a few weeks. I mean, not us in the podcast, us fight fans. We have next week to look forward to, and then like a month off. So
finally,
enjoy the time with your family.
A little bit of time off, man.
Have you guys, has anybody tracked how long it's been since we've had a break? It's got to be a few months at least.
Yeah. It's like 17 straight cards, I think.
Oh, yeah. My God. Crazy.
Yeah, it's been nuts. I'm looking. Actually, I'm a huge fight fan, but I don't mind a little bit of a hiatus here. I'll play a little NBA. I'll keep playing CS:GO. Just a lot more relaxed. You know.
There you go. Enjoy the time with your family, guys. Good luck in your contest. See you next time.
Thanks, everybody.